Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. We're going to have a little different type of program today, and that I will be dealing with health and environmental issues and social issues, but I believe we should take a look at a larger issue, one that is raised by Dr. Nathan Daly, a medical doctor, on Green Med Info. I've written a commentary in response, and I will share his insights as well. And on a day when people are shopping like mad, and some of them are mad in the way they shop, on a day after we have consumed far in excess of what any reasonable person would need in their body, I believe that we can get some insights from our behavior. Why? Because I believe that almost all of our behavior, at least 95% of what we think and do in a given day, has been engineered. I believe that the content of our discontent is based upon intentional manipulation over a long period of time. Now, we'd like to think that our heart disease and cancer, our diabetes and dementia, multiple sclerosis and fibromyalgia, our kids' inattention in school, or the nature of bullying, the nature of greed and selfishness, that these are just normal conditions, some genetic and some social. I don't believe in either. I believe that almost all of our problems can be looked at in a different way, and that's what I intend to do on our program today. Open up a window that will challenge our preconceived notions of how we've gotten to where we are today, the mess we're in. And I will interrelate our overwrought empire, our hydrofracking, releasing radon gases, of the war on cancer, the war on AIDS, the war on poverty, the war on crime, the war on everything that we never win, and why. So this should be an interesting exploration for us. First, what do I believe is at the heart of all this? I believe that we have been very methodically conditioned in a way that is not so obvious. Every time you turn on television and radio and now the internet with all the different social media, you are a part of programming. Ask people, why do you watch a vulgar, unseemly a reality show that just exemplifies the worst of human nature, greed, contempt, betrayal, vulgarity, lack of civility, moral ethics? And yet these are the most popular programs. The most popular food program isn't one dealing with how to get healthy eating good foods or how to make healthy foods. Instead, it's a program on gluttony or eating the most bizarre types of food that the average person would never be able to eat but finds a fascination in watching someone eat them. We also have made iconic figures out of Julia Child and James Beard and others whose diets have followed religiously would only lead to obesity and heart disease and cancers. I'm not suggesting they did this intentionally. Of course not. They were decent enough people. But it's creating success in a vacuum of reason where we are not given an opportunity to look at the cause and effect or the likely outcome of what we are participating in or the choices we've made, and it impacts everything in our lives. To understand this, you would have to go back in time, as Dr. Nathan Daly suggests, to a person I mentioned previously on this program. His name was Edward Bernays, Bernays. He was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, and he drew upon that association. He learned a lot from Sigmund Freud, and he became, quite simply, in my opinion, the greatest single manipulator of the populations, not only in the United States, but this was later used in World War II. Bernays, according to Daly, defined the engineering of consent as the art of manipulating people, who he claims are fundamentally irrational, emotional, and not under their own conscious control. That, by the way, is also the feelings of a man who I have a great deal of respect for, Dr. Lipton, who said pretty much the same thing, that 95% of everything we do in a day is coming from our unconscious or subconscious mind, meaning it's not within our control. These are issues that were laid down early in life, and we're merely reacting inappropriately to them. So something happened early in life. You may have been rejected. You may have been verbally abused, physically abused. And as a result today, you react if someone says something you don't like, or someone says something that doesn't honor you, or someone doesn't go along with you, or someone disagrees with you. Suddenly your mind plays one of those early tapes, and now you're reacting as if you did when you're a young child. And that's what we see all the time, inappropriate emotional responses. And some people are so conditioned that on an intellectual level, if you sit and had a conversation and you said, let's just use an example, and I'm sure this has happened to a lot of people, calling and leaving really toxic messages on someone's phone answering machine. I'm sure this has happened to most of you. And you listen to it and you think, okay, someone's angry at me. Why couldn't they just speak to me and tell me that they shared a difference of opinion? Why leave an angry message? What is the purpose of that? And then when you speak with a person and you say, you took something out of context, you reformed an argument to serve your emotional needs because this is not what happened. More often than not, they will agree and apologize. And then they do it again and again and again and again. And we don't get the idea that this isn't going to end. There's no epiphany. There's no catharsis. There's no, oh my God, got it. Not going to do it anymore. Finally got it. Going to grow up. Not going to let early lifehood traumas and improper associations, toxic associations affect my behavior today. But then they do. We see it in people who will go to drugs or food or alcohol or in tranquilizers or medication or even social networking, twittering, as a way of engaging in reactions that distract them from their pain instead of simply dealing with it, letting it go, and replacing it with something more positive. But how did it come about that these people weren't smarter than their reactions? It's quite simple, because at some point, virtually all of us, every single person, is impacted to varying degrees by their earlier and later life conditioning. We become commodities. And to get us to buy what we don't need, to spend money we don't have, they have to engineer a consent. To do that, they have to have control over our conscious minds. Hence, you see always the most attractive models. They could be vacuous intellectually and emotionally, but they have a look. And that look is supposed to mimic our desire. So if we want to look good in a suit, we have to buy the suit that a certain nice-looking person wears, or a car has to be a certain color, and it has to be shown in a certain sexy, powerful way. A Ram truck. You don't see them just showing you a Ram truck. You don't see someone discussing the motor or how it's built or the drivetrain. Instead, you show them going up and down and across desert and across mud, and to make it seem like if I own that truck, I'll be as tough as truck, enhancing your own lack of self-esteem, your own masculinity by associating with the masculinity of the truck. Well, if everybody agrees that a Ram truck is a masculine truck, then someone who drives a Ram truck must be equally masculine. And then we see all these men. The man who's in the boat sail breaks, and because he is at that point in life, they say, where he has known how to do things, he fixes the sail. Or driving a bunch of horses in the mud, then it gets stuck, and he goes out and he gets the horses. The whole implication is that this man is so smart and so wise at this age in life that when he has erectile dysfunction, he knows how to get a drug to get an erection. At no point does it suggest that most erections are frequently, or lack of erections, are due to improper blood flow or improper excitement. They won't talk about the real underlying causes. It's associative. And hence, they're playing with a person's unconscious mind. But it works. It works. There was a four-hour BBC documentary entitled The Century of the Self. And what it looked at was the emergence of such manipulative approaches in the United States and worldwide. And suffice to say, they were highly effective. And Bernays is thought by many to have been the person most influential in everyone in American history of promoting the modern American consumerism, the corporate lifestyle manipulation, and even a new definition of democracy. Today, democracy is going into countries like Libya and Pakistan and Afghanistan and Iraq and any other country we choose, and showing that we're bringing our democracy to their country by our drones and our military footprint. And people become very patriotic. Why? Because the people who help create the images are the generals and the colonels and the admirals who appear on television, all of whom are paid or who have contracts with private foundations to do this or corporations to do it. We don't see that agenda. We're led to believe that they're purely altruistic. Not true. And then they get on hyper-nationalistic, egocentric people show like Sean Hannity. And hence, if you're not for them, then you're against America. You're for the enemy. And Bill O'Reilly's also suggested that. You know, at this point, if, you know, we're in the war in Iraq, so what do you say? Shut up. Otherwise, you're against us, as if there's no other room. That's conditioning. Because if you have enough people saying weapons of mass destruction, the next time we find out maybe an atomic bomb cloud, then you're conditioned. Then we don't look for the truth. We don't look for the truth in anything. Think how many times we've seen the walk for the cure, the bike for the cure, pink everything. But do we have any cures? The answer is no. Well, shouldn't we be concerned? No, because we are never conditioned to look at the truth in results. We are only conditioned to no longer question effort. So as long as we can show we're putting an effort into something, that's all we should expect, not the results. So if the Democrats say, we want to protect unions, and then sign GATT and NAFTA and CAFTA and now the Trans-Pacific Partnership, all of which will eviscerate union jobs. And if they say we want to keep manufacturing in the United States, but they sign the legislation and they vote for the president, Bill Clinton, that started this mass exodus of corporations out of the United States in the last 12 years, over 58,000 corporations have left, millions and millions of jobs gone. And yet they're not challenged by the majority of their own rank and file, or by most Democrats. Why? Because they've been conditioned to believe as long as you're a Democrat or as long as you're liberal, you're on the right side of being against war, the right side of protecting people's rights, the right side of protecting the poor in the United States, the right side of protecting unions and jobs and pensions and negotiated bargaining so that you have some fair trade, all of which is a lie. None of that is true, but it's the illusion. To get the illusion, someone had to give them an illusion. So we give illusion. We build illusion by what we say. And if we say it enough times, no one looks at what we actually do. How many times did Obama say he wasn't going to do politics as usual, wasn't going to have the old-time Washington insiders? And yet every single person he picked was a Washington insider. Every single person. Picking Monsanto's top lawyer to run food safety at the FDA, and the top GMO governor, Vilsack, to run the USDA. And then lo and behold, surprise, surprise, they're now promoting GMOs in Africa. We don't look at the results, just the effort. We want to feed the poor. How exactly are you going to do it? Sustainable? Organic? No. GMOs. But that doesn't feed the poor. Look at the 250,000 dead people in India who committed suicide after they tried GMO corn and cotton and didn't work. We won't look at that part of it. We'll never look with an embedded journalist at what we leave in a war zone. We'll never look at the deformed babies from depleted uranium. Or we'll never look at the casualties and the survivors of what was banned and is against international law, phosphorus bombs used by Israel against the Palestinians and used in the Bosnia War and also used in Iraq, in Fallujah. We will not do that. We will not look at any of the treaties that we have broken. We will not look at the fact that every single country we've gone in to bring democracy, peace, and freedom, we brought privatization, globalization, and tyranny for those who would fight against it. We are always our opposite. Why can't we see this? Why can't we see that the war on AIDS has nothing to do with AIDS? It has to do with foundations and gay organizations that live off those grants and individuals who have become heads of these organizations who rail against any doctor, any scientist, including multiple Nobel Prize winners in science in AIDS research, who show that everything we're doing with AIDS is wrong. And yet they have the ear of the media. And therefore, anyone who challenges them, they'll say, oh, you're an AIDS denialist. Not at all. They don't deny AIDS. They deny how it's being dealt with. But they have the power of the media. The media only accepts official truths. No other truth exists. So if you're one of 800,000 doctors, and most of what you're doing is unscientific, as long as you're doing it officially, you'll be rewarded. It is the insanity of it all. So now what we have is we have the electronic media with the online ads, the news, the commercials, the editorials, the campaign speeches, the selective scientific reporting. All of that is giving us a world of their perceived reality. And it is below the level of our acute awareness, meaning we suspend our own capacity for critical analysis and critical judgment. It then spreads out and amplifies and loops back through social media networks. The explicit content may seem informational, while the implicit content successfully manipulates our emotions. We become irrational. We function on subconscious impulses. No matter how willfully independent and stubborn we may be, we are affected. Exposure is all that is needed. All the decisions are made for us, only to be rationally defended after the fact. Effective manipulation works like a toxicant. If we wish to preserve our individual freedom of choice, the freedom of consent, the freedom to live a healthy life, we must work to avoid the toxic media. And most of the media is toxic. Certainly the left media is totally toxic. The right media is toxic. Well, where does that leave us? You have to be very selective in the media you allow in, the people you allow in your lives. What would happen if we simply said no and turned off all media for a period of time, just took a break, just detox from all the artificial stimulation? What would be the results? Recently, there was a program on Al Jazeera, and it opened with a woman picking acorns in a forest. The story evolved that this woman and her husband and family could no longer afford living in a major city in Spain. They had reduced the income by 30 to 35% and increased other expenses. So they were simply out of money, out of luck, even though they were working. Then they heard about moving to a small village in the country that provided a less expensive lifestyle. They made that choice. In the process of making that choice, they found that they had a renewed interest in their family and life. They were less stressed. They were growing food organically. They saw what it was like to be in an uncluttered, non-hyper-stimulating world. They found quality of life. That's happening throughout Europe. People can no longer afford to live in the cities. So the mass migration over the last 30 years from the country to the city is now reversing, where the people in the country have a better quality of life. And now with the internet, a lot of those people who were wedded to the city and the urban and suburban environment can go back and still continue to work. And I was thinking, one of the joys of being in the country is you turn off the artificial stimulation, the electromagnetic pulse that has to get into your brain every second to tell you what to watch. We become addicted to answering Facebook and Twitters as if somehow if someone likes us or likes what we're doing, we have to like him in return. This is not real and authentic communication. And we're losing that. Even how people Twitter is reducing their vocabulary. They are becoming illiterate. And yet, that's the new norm. So I believe that right now we must stop and understand that when we tune on television or the media, the entire emerging electronic media technologies have understood our needs and our insecurities. More often than not, they associate us with a great deal of stress. They create patterns of fear. They did it in the electoral process, causing one side to fear the outcome if the other was elected. Most of what we see is violence, and we now can absolutely state that constant association with violence in the media, on television, will create acceptable levels of violence within our normal social behavior, where we no longer are surprised at bullying or surprised when people steal, lie, cheat, betray. This is now the new norm, where relationships are supposed to be dysfunctional so you can play out in front of others this discord. Harmony, synchronicity, higher values, these are to be disdained. People are more spiritual without being religious. These are to be completely avoided. It scares people. Being healthy is no longer considered something to admire or respect because you are so uniquely different if you're healthy today. A healthy attitude to share and care for others is anathema to most people who engage in constant greed and selfish pursuit. Now, let me give you a little background on this just to give you an idea how interrelated our conditioning is to how bad we've gotten. From Jonathan Benson of Natural News, how processed food contributes to massive rainforest destruction and environmental damage. Quote, when considering the various factors that are most responsible for widespread environmental pollution and ecological destruction in today's world, most people probably envision things like industrial manufacturing facilities spilling chemicals in nearby waterways. True. Coal-fired power plants billowing plumes of black smoke into the blue sky, and thousands of miles of major highways occupied by millions of gas-guzzling, fume-emitting vehicles. Well, true, but agriculture in this industrialized era is actually one of the biggest contributors to the destruction of the planet. How? Because all across the globe, large areas of land, pristine rainforests and jungles and savannas are literally being clear-cut and turned into mega plantations for growing major cash crops like soy, corn, canola, and wheat, all of which are used to formulate various ingredients and additives used throughout the processed food supply. In other words, there's big money to be made in growing such crops precisely because their derivatives are added to almost every type of processed food available. And in the eyes of the unscrupulous opportunist, rainforests and other natural habitats are merely inconvenient obstacles to be defeated rather than natural treasures. Then it goes into how much we do to destroy the environment just so we can have our dairy products and our meat products or some derivation of it. Separately, Homeland Security spent $430 million totally wasted on radios, quote, that its employees don't know how to use. getting the agencies responsible for national security to communicate better with one of the main reasons the Department of Homeland Security was created after the terrorist attack. But according to its own department's inspector general, its missions have failed. Why? Because 123,000 employees were given $430 million worth of radios, and no one knows how to use them. It's all a waste. Now, why is this important? I use this as one example because I can go through every single federal, state, and local bureaucracy and show you that at least minimally, absolute minimal, 50% of every agency is worthless. It does not serve our interest. It is there to serve its own interest. Same way with major foundations. Many of the environmental groups have taken money from the gas industries, the oil industries, the nuclear industries. Now they're pro those. And therefore, they've compromised original integrity, or they're only there to serve their own interests. They make a lot of money when you work there. They have big corporate headquarters. So making money from you and I so they can continue to support one side versus another, we never look at the outcome of what they do. We don't look at the outcome. Are we safer because of $1 trillion given to the Homeland Security in the last 12 years? The answer is no, we are not. They can't even spend $430 million on radios and make them work. Well, that's only one little example. I could go to the military-industrial complex and show you trillions of dollars spent on weapon systems that were archaic, that were redundant, that didn't work, but we were never shown the results. We were only told by the hyper-vigilant nationalist and militarist, we must spend every penny we have, even if our children have nothing to eat, even if we all starve to death. Heaven forbid that Sean Hannity or any of the other people on Fox or any other people who hold that view, including the corporate Democrats who are equally culpable, should suggest that it's just purely propagandizing. But how did they get away with it? Because they conditioned us to believe that our defense, our security, is our first and most important issue, and we must give away our rights. What good is a constitution if you've been nuked? So we give away the constitution, we give away the Bill of Rights. And the most susceptible people are those who claim that they're to protect the rights. The absolute hypocrites, the Republicans, not that they have an intellect to begin with, nor the Tea Party that have begun the supplicants for them, because if they really were what they are supposed to be, they'd be the first people demonstrating outside. I'd like to see Rush Limbaugh, if he could actually stand up for an hour and walk for 3 feet without collapsing of a heart attack. I'd like to see him get all of his followers, you know, the people who are so hyper-vigilant and so racist. I'd like to get them in front of the White House saying, and the Defense Department saying, you're taking out money and putting it into these worthless corporations that have great lobbyists, that have great sales pitches behind closed doors, but you're taking away our rights. You've eviscerated the Bill of Rights. You've taken away habeas corpus. You can spy on us. You can detain us. You can kill us. You can assassinate us without any judicial oversight. That's wrong. But they never have done that. You won't see a single one of them do it. They're absolute, complete frauds. But we won't say that, will we? We won't call them out, will we? Because if the left called the right out, then you'd have to call the left out for doing the same. When was the last time you saw Rachel Maddow or any of these people? Keith Olbermann is as bad as Rush Limbaugh. The two of them together, my God, if both of them fell at the same time, they'd break the concrete. But you don't see this. You don't see those hypocrites on that suck up MSNBC. Terrible organization. You don't see them. Why? Because do they ever go out there and put their ass on the line by challenging just one thing? Let's say the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, why we're really there, what we did in Libya, NATO, why we don't need it, this archaic institution that does nothing but foment crimes against humanity. We won't ever see them doing that. Not because they're not smart enough to figure out how to do it. It's because they've been conditioned. As long as you posture yourself against a perceived official enemy, then you are supported financially in your career. You become a superstar. You have unlimited lecture engagements. You're wined and dined. You're spoke well of because you represent our side. And it goes on both sides. Hence, you won't see any a legitimate challenge to everything that's wrong. Those people, the real liberal Democrats, the authentic liberal Democrats, that will stand up and will protest and will protest on what is wrong, as you will the real historical conservatives, they're nowhere to be seen because they've been pushed out of the picture because they could change the message of the conditioning. And if you get another person, if you get Jill Stein, if you got Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party in there, to discuss any of the issues, it could cause confusion. It would be like reprogramming someone who's highly programmed. You don't want the average American to think, because Americans don't think, we react. We're nothing but a nation of reactors. That's why we have fat kids. That's why we're fat. That's why we're dumb. That's why we will go to a bank that is going to take away our house and continue to do business with them, as if somehow we don't make that connection. We'll go into a Walmart store and buy something that's made in China as slave labor that one time we made at union labor, and we won't make the connection. And we'll get there on Black Friday and trample over an employee and kill the employee to make sure we get our discount. What does that say about us? Not Walmart, but about us, when we have lost all sense of what it is to be a human being because we've been conditioned not to be. One more example. Americans could stop hydrofracking in one day, but they don't, because they've been led to believe that, natural gas, then we don't no longer depend upon Saudi Arabian oil. This is the latest from Carl Grossman. Fracking for gas not only uses toxic chemicals that can contaminate drinking and groundwater, it also releases substantial quantities of radioactive poison from the ground that will remain hot and deadly for thousands of years. Issuing a report yesterday exposing major radioactive impacts of hydraulic fracking, known as fracking, was Grassroots Environmental Education, an organization in New York with extensive fracking background and insight. The Marcellus Shale region, which covers upstate New York, is loaded with gas that can be released through the fracking process. It involves injecting fluid and chemicals under high pressure to fracture shale formations, release the gas captured in them. But it also releases radioactive radium-226 with a half-life of 1,600 years. A half-life is how long it takes for a radioactive substance to lose half of its radiation. But is that stopping us from hydrofracking upstate or in Pennsylvania? Not at all. Will it cause a large outpouring of people? Not at all. Climate change trumps terrorism, a threat to national security, by Brent Blackwelder. Quote, climate destabilization eclipses all other security threats to human civilization except for a major nuclear war. But the current global economy gives no signals to investors and consumers about the profound implications of climate destabilization on water cycles, agriculture, and humanity's ability to grow food for 7 billion people. So, what did we learn from Sandy? Nothing. What did we learn from Katrina? Nothing. What did we learn about all the people who now have floods in England? Nothing. How about those dying and having their farm land washed away and their season crops in Bangladesh and Pakistan right now? Nothing. What about drought in 16 states and severe drought in 30 states? Nothing. What are we going to do about our water supply? Nothing. Until it runs out. So the idea is that no matter what crisis faces us, it is always better to watch television and look at something that distracts us than it is to acknowledge that we have a problem. And so we don't deal with the problems. Quote, new national economic study shows hundreds of old coal generators are candidates for closure. The trouble is, they won't be. Why? Because coal is becoming cheaper. And as coal becomes cheaper and more people are told, shouldn't we be doing something in the United States, then we will do exactly that. We will put more coal in there, and more coal will mean that we'll have more coal-burning fireplaces, and we'll have more plants, and we'll have more global warming. And just a few more things here. An article that I have up on my website right now, free for you. Myself and Jeremy Stillman, Solar Storms, Katrina Times 1,000, A Real Armageddon is Possible but Not Inevitable. It's a 20-some page article that gives you all the references and what's going to actually potentially happen. Solar storms are coming. How bad they are, we don't know. But this gives you an idea of why they're coming, what we can expect. What are we doing about this? Nothing. Because, once again, if you condition people to be concerned about legitimate threats and then to make reasonable approaches to protecting themselves and their families, you'd lose control over. Grand Theft Wall Street by Mike Whitney, What You Should Know About the Federal Housing Association. Here's what he says in just one paragraph. The Federal Housing Administration needs a bailout, but don't expect the media to tell you why. Instead, they'll give you some baloney about how the agency was used to, quote, stabilize the housing market following the government takeover of mortgage giant Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in September 2008. While there's some truth to this, it misses the larger point, which is that the Federal Housing Authority was used to generate as many toxic mortgages as possible to keep the money flowing into the big Wall Street banks and to prevent housing prices from plunging even further, leaving bank balance sheets deeper in the red. That's what really happened. The Federal Housing Association was looted to save the banks. It's another example of Grand Theft Wall Street. And then he goes into depth about how much they've spent and lost into the billions. But here's what's interesting in this. What we didn't know, what you and I didn't know, is that all this time since the crisis, the Federal Housing Authority has 17% of all of its loans are delinquent. Now, mind you, it has over $1 trillion in loans. And where normally it's 1% to 2% a year for most banks. But then they made it so that you didn't have to put any money down to get a loan, no down payment. And you didn't. They made it even less likely with a bad credit score. So what it means in reality is if you were broke, if you didn't have any kind of job, if you had no credit, you can manage to get a loan through this. And even if it's almost absolutely certain you're going to lose your home. Well, what does that tell us about people being irresponsible and selfish and knowing they can game the system for their own good? That's greed. That's not the 1%. That's the 99%. You should have a 20% down payment to buy anything and then have a proof through a history of repayment that you're likely to repay that. Because if they don't repay this, and they're not going to, then we, the public, will have to once again bail out the Federal Housing Authority, and we will have no responsibility for how it's run. One more idea about how, as long as we are conditioned to believe that authorities are always right and we're not authorities, the economists are right about money and we're not an economist, the medical doctors are right about medicine, but we're not medical doctors, then how are we supposed to have any input when our conditioning is just stay in your place and be quiet and don't make waves, and those who are in a position to know better will help you? Last year, the number one cause of death in America was medicine, iatrogenesis. Not a single article was written on it. The only article written to date is the one that five of us, medical doctors and PhDs, wrote that has never been refuted and sent to 7,000 members in the media, medical establishment, peer-reviewed journals, and all legislators at all 50 states and every member of Congress. Not a single person responded. Because the condition is, if we're told to spend more money on medicine than anything else, more than defense, it'll hit $3 trillion this year, and more people are dying, and 88% of it has never been scientifically proven for how it's being applied or safe, including vaccines and all of psychiatry, then if we allowed the question in people's minds, is this real? Then they might break away from the conditioned response of, I'm depressed, better get a tranquilizer. My kid's acting up, better get him diagnosed. He's probably ADD and get him on Ritalin. I'm going through a rough time right now. I can't sleep because my baby's crying at night. Bipolar in your baby, get him on drugs. That's how powerful conditioning is. And now you just won't go in and eat a regular meal because you've seen the supersized meals. And that's conditioning. This is the latest on this. On Monsanto Insurance, USDA tells farmers to pay for avoiding troubles with agri-giant, meaning no longer will the government protect the small farmer from the big giants like and highly litigious farmers growers like Monsanto. So that means almost the end of small farming in the United States. And finally, on climate change, this just in. The UN report were really bad at cutting global warming emissions. It's not going to happen. Quote, the planet is screwed. This week proved a major series of reports have come in from around the world, each and every one shows that global warming has gotten so far ahead that it's now tipping. The World Bank has said this, the Center for American Progress, we're especially screwing over the poor and middle class. He goes on to talk about why we're doing this and who's behind it. But none of that will matter because the average American is disconnected from being responsible for anything. They're not responsible for their own kids having diabetes, adult diabetes, or obesity, themselves buying things they don't need. So how are they supposed to suddenly become aware of an environment, become proactive in what they buy? They won't be. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We're going to go to a guest in a moment, take on just one of these issues, the myth that mammograms will help prevent breast cancer. To the contrary, says my guest, Sarah G. He says that we could have had upwards of 1,200,000 women developing breast cancer because of mammograms. This is interesting. We'll have him on as a newsmaker segment in a moment, and I'll have your calls on TalkBack, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And now that I've concluded my commentary on how we are incapable of making right choices, the majority of people, because we have been so perfectly conditioned to make wrong choices and accept all the wrong people and for all the wrong institutions. And all of our major institutions are corrupt. They've all betrayed us. All of our leaders are corrupt. They've all betrayed us. And yet we continue to support them. What does that say about us, not them? That's the issue. On December 6th, we're going to be giving a big yell out to the entire genetic engineering industry, Monsanto in particular. We will defy you. We will take you to court. We'll expose you. Much as we did with the most watched documentary that I'm told in world history, millions of people have watched it. The War on Health, the tyranny of the FDA. This one is on GMOs, the toxic time bombs. That's its only premiere in New York, one night only, one showing only, 7 p.m. If you want to join me there, and I hope you do, it will be at the Lowe's Theater. I'm not doing it at the Ethical Culture, but at a theater, the largest one I could find, at 7 p.m. Thursday, December 6th. Call 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422 to join me. I'm also going to give everyone who attends a copy of the film itself and a hardback book. And all proceeds, net proceeds, are going to help to feed homeless people. On December 9th, that same week, on Sunday at 2 p.m. at Long Island Cinema Arts Center on Park Avenue in Huntington, Long Island, the same film will be played. I will be there, and I'll also be giving out a free DVD copy of the film and a free book as well. And the tickets over there you can get at 1-800-838-3006, 1-800-838-3006. Those are the only two New York showings, one on Long Island, one in Manhattan. For the Manhattan one, call 646-926-5422. Let's go over now and say hello to my guest. He's a newsmaker guest standing by. His name is Sayer G, S-A-Y-E-R-J-I. He is the founder of GreenMedInfo.com, one of the world's most widely referenced natural health websites. And the site's natural medicine database contains over 21,000 study abstracts from about 5,000 peer-reviewed publications supporting natural health sciences. He is the co-author of The Cancer Killers, and he's with us now. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary. It's a great honor to be here.
today, there are a lot of issues that we have in common, but today I'd like for you to address specifically, because this is a newsmaker segment, it's a little shorter, the 30 years of breast screening and the 1.3 million wrongly treated, according to your article in the current Green Med Info, and how you say the breast cancer industry's holy grail, the mammography, is the primary weapon in the war against breast cancer, has been disproved. In fact, mammography appears to have created 1.3 million cases of breast cancer in the U.S. population that were not there. Tell us about this, please.
Thanks, Gary. On the eve of Thanksgiving, there's something called embargoed science, and publications like the New England Journal of Medicine, where this research is coming from, make an agreement with the media to release the story at a certain time. So just the fact that it was released on this major holiday is, I think, quite interesting because it didn't get as much attention as it deserved. Basically, they looked at 30 years of breast cancer incidence as well as mammography screenings, and they found that over the course of the past 30 years, approximately 1.3 million women were overdiagnosed, which means that they were found to have an early stage of cancer that was treated as if it were malignant, so mastectomy or lumpectomy and radiation, as well as chemo and follow-up suppressive therapies were employed. So what basically happened, according to these researchers, is that instead of seeing a decrease in mortality because of early detection, technically those who underwent mammography screenings had an increased relative risk of mortality. So one would assume that the late-stage cancers would be reduced if this was, in fact, a real cancer they were finding. Now, what happens is that they assume there's this perfect body, and that if there's any aberration, meaning in an X-ray, if you see a lesion or abnormal growth in milk ducts, which is known as ductal carcinoma in situ, that's it's a cancer that could progress. In fact, what they're finding is that it's not that case at all, and that many of these cancers are actually benign. And so the very definition of cancer, of course, is the Greek word for crab. It moves, it expands. Ductal carcinoma, or ductal cancer, you know, basically in situ means in place, non-moving. So even the very classification of DCIS, which, mind you, is 70% of mammography-detected, quote, breast cancers are DCIS, which do not present with symptoms. Women don't have a lump. They don't feel pain. They just get a screening, and they're told you have DCIS cancer, so let's treat. So it's very interesting this is happening now, Gary, because we have 25 years since the beginning of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which was founded by the Imperial Chemical Industry. Okay, this is a huge British corporation that happened to have a pharmaceutical subsidiary, Zeneca, which later merged in 1999 with Astra AB to become AstraZeneca, and they are the ones behind Breast Cancer Awareness Month, where the primary mission was to tell women that they had to get these screenings in order to early detect cancer. So they happened to have the patents on tamoxifen and Aramidex, which were the two blockbuster first-line treatments for, quote, breast cancer. So you can see the obvious conflict of interest.
I sure can. I'm glad that you brought this to our attention. I'm going to refer people to your site to read the articles, and go to greenmedinfo.com, greenmedinfo.com. And the book is The Cancer Killers. And my newsmaker guest, Sarah G. And Sarah, I'm going to invite you back for an extended discussion on the whole idea that when there are those, and there are many, medical doctors, reporters, journalists, nutritionists, who come up with the truth, immediately they're attacked on Wikipedia, which is highly controlled by the pharmaceutical industry, and also by the quackbusters. And I want to do a discussion on, once again, our conditioning. As long as a quackbuster is reported in the New York Times, as they have been used so many times, they're considered legitimate even when they lose every time in court, even when the court says that they have no scientific basis, and in effect, that they have no credibility. And yet the people that they're attacking have full credibility and have never been found wrong. We accept those who are wrong rather than those who are right. That's, again, part of that conditioning where you can't even tell who's telling the truth because your conditioning precludes you from challenging official wrongdoers. So I want to have that conversation with you on an upcoming program, all right?
That'd be great.
Sarah June, my newsmaker guest, a short segment, but letting you know, before you go get a mammogram, he's done some definitive work on this, and it's in an article. Read it. Now, I'd like for you, I'm going to give you a little quiz for those who are listening to just the first 55 minutes of our program. I want you to see if you can tell me who this person is who is saying the following. All right? Just listen up.
I'm sorry. I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful. But we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world. Millions of despairing men, women, and little children. Victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, or what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate, only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power, let us all unite, let us fight for a new world. A decent world that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Who was the author of that? Who was reciting that? 888-874-4888 is our talkback number. For those of you who are listening on a land-based station and going to be signing off in about 11 seconds from now, you can continue listening by going to progressiveradionetwork.com or calling on the phone, 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. I'm Gary Knoll. Again, join us for the premiere, the world premiere of our new documentary, call 646-926-5422. Let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi, who's standing by. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary, and thank you for that very powerful show. I had one mammogram in my life, and it was the most mutilating and humiliating experience I've ever had, and I'll never have one again. So it's important that people know that not only Do they are they not good diagnostic tools, but they're a horrific diagnostic test to have. Anyway, I have a beautiful letter here, considering it's the Thanksgiving weekend, and I thought I would read it to your audience on the air. She says, it's from Elaine. She says, "Dear Gary, I'm so grateful that all of us have you in our lives. For one small example, I imagine what it had been like if I had done no mental or physical preparations for Hurricane Sandy. There was 6 feet of water in the ground floor of my Brooklyn building, and sadly, the business people and artists lost everything there. The whole thing was shocking, even having been somewhat prepared. I am very fortunate to have suffered no losses and was able to leave the day before. I am muscular and healthy by following your programs. I was strong enough to start the generator when I needed to, since there was no power where I was, for 6 days. It was minimally personally stressful due to having thought about these things from listening to your show. I'm easily shocked, so it was important to be more ready. I think about what it would have been like if WBAI couldn't broadcast for that time. The kindness and latitude that you showed with BAI after the difficulties you experienced there exemplifies peace and goodwill and working together, and it helped all of us. Hearing BAI and hearing you working with them was one of those profoundly beautiful surprises while things were kind of dark. I was able to get to know BAI again a bit since I didn't have internet access. I know you used your kitchens to cook van loads of food for people downtown too, where there were no other resources for them. Each show you present has as much information as 100 of some other shows. But the difference is that the scoop on your show is useful and prescient due to your vast experience at packing your program with assimilable info from the most current reliable sources. I have enjoyed so many years of a needed daily check-in with common sense, activism, reality, and friendships, which have guided my life in the best of ways. Today, I think of you and thank you so much, and I hope you enjoy a beautiful Thanksgiving."
That was very nice, and that was Elaine. Well,
Elaine from Brooklyn.
Thank you, Elaine from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Luann, thank you. We have a full board of calls. I see Montreal here, and Pittsburgh, and Louisiana. So people are calling in who have an answer. Let's see. We have a bunch, so I'm just going to ask them to stay on here for a second, and I'm going to go to them as we come up towards the end of our program. Stephen from California. Stephen, you're on.
Hi, Gary. How's it going?
It's going great.
All right. Good to hear.
Stephen, you're on.
Oh, I was just calling about the quote that was just read.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a Jewish barber from The Great Dictator. It's Charlie Chaplin.
You're absolutely right. Thank you, Stephen. And Jay from New York City. You're still up there, Jay?
Yes, sir. Hi, Gary. Thank you for taking my call. I was going to say the same thing, The Great Dictator from Charlie Chaplin, one of his half-silent movies, but it was just wonderful. I'm glad somebody found out what it was.
Yeah, well, we want to share what, and just think for a moment, think how relevant his words were. Clear back then, we're talking about over 70 years ago, and how that is so appropriate today, where we're asking our troops, think about what you're doing. Think how you're being used. Think of the consequences to other people. That doesn't bring democracy. Programming people, controlling people, that doesn't bring democracy. And we become programmed. We become conditioned. We become desensitized. Look, we show one side of a conflict because it serves one particular interest. You go elsewhere in the world, they show a different side of that conflict, instead of showing you the real underlying causes of conflict, and more importantly, their solutions. That's why I had Rabbi Michael Lerner's commentary about how to resolve the issues on both sides to have a lasting peace, if it is peace that the leaders really want. The people want peace, but more often than not, the leaders don't, because of whose interests they serve. And that's what we're not looking at. Again, that comes with a conditioning. If you're conditioned to believe that Bradley Manning, who actually brought us the truth about how innocent civilians were killed by Blackwater troops, when he got a copy of the video, and Wikipedia played it, if you believe that's a crime and that people wanted him dead and should be hung and shot and he's a traitor, traitor to what? He simply showed us the truth. You know, innocent individuals were targeted. They were killed with no consequences to the contractor, Blackwater. And yet, when David Petraeus, when he, as the top person, releases information to his biographer, who then puts it in a book about all of his heroics and his actions, that's considered patriotic. But because of the image of him, and everyone prefacing any criticism they have of his affair with he was the greatest of this and he was the greatest of that, and I'm having to say, well, how great was he? Would you say he was great if you were his wife or his children? No, you wouldn't. And if he lied to them, would he lie to us? And the answer is yes. If you lie to one person, you're a liar. If you steal from one person, you're a thief. If you betray one person, you're a betrayer. That's who you are. And the rest of who you are is merely a manufactured, even a perfected image. Because it is the image that we are embracing, it is the image that we are fawning over. It's the image of the celebrity, whether a celebrity broadcaster or a celebrity movie star or a celebrity economist or a celebrity person on Wall Street. We never question anything except the image we've embraced. So we cannot decondition ourselves to see the truth of anything, and hence the truth of everything is always evading us. We continue to recycle hope as they give us into what becomes our misery. Jay, and all the rest who called, you were all right. I was watching every single person who called in was absolutely correct, and we thank you very much for calling in today, and we look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. We're out of time now. Let's say hello to, excuse me, Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. I think you need some chlorophyll there.
Yeah.
How are you?
Doing great. What are you going to talk about today?
Well, we'll pick up on the discussion of two things. We'll be talking about Jesse Jackson Jr.'s resignation from Congress, and we'll follow up on Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Oh, St. Joan of Arc of the State Department.
That's right. The great slitherer has again slithered her way through a rather mucky situation.
You know, I'm surprised that no one in the media ever questioned her on when her husband refused to acknowledge that Rwanda was genocide, even though members of the State Department had proven it was genocide, and the head of the UN had proven it was genocide.
How? It is the reason that she does not like and cannot get along with Susan Rice.
Okay.
That's the reason.
If that, good, because that's a missing piece that I was not aware of. I was not aware of Susan Rice's knowledge on Rwanda.
Well, she was an advisor. She was in the Clinton administration, as a matter of fact, an advisor on African affairs. But she also advised Michael Dukakis in his presidential run and was Obama's foreign affairs advisor. And it was in that capacity that she earned Hillary Rodham Clinton's wrath, because Susan Rice reminded Obama, who in turn reminded just about everybody, that the Clinton administration did not respond to the genocide in Rwanda.
They did respond. It was just not responding in a way that would have stopped it where they could have stopped it.
Correct.
And no
Correct.
One has held the Clintons accountable for what was one of the major slaughters in human history in a short period of time, 90 days. By the way, one little quick horror story there, because I'm doing a documentary on that. The head of the UN military command in Rwanda determined through their sources where the weapons, including the machetes, were being put before the slaughter, and said he was going to go and raid it and take it away, because without the weapons, they would not be able to conduct this massacre, and he was told to stand down. That came through the UN ambassador, and it also then came through the UN. When they were bringing people out in front of his mission and then mutilating them, and they could have stopped this, he was told to stand down. When they could have gone in and protected over 2,200 people in that Catholic church where the Hutu were outside banging machetes against their legs as the Belgium troops left the compound, and he was going to go in there. He was told to stand down. Every single thing that was to have been done that could have limited or even mitigated what happened there, he was told to stand down, all because of Clinton's White House. No one's ever held him accountable for that.
Hmm.
Okay.
So that's where we're going today.
Have a good one.
Thank you.